Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. In today's episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing Michael Tucker. Now, he's the founder of an agency that helped a friend's business skyrocket to $750K in just 10 months. Michael's impact in digital marketing world is profound. With over 5 years of experience, Michael has empowered more than 100 online entrepreneurs and generated over $35 million in revenue through virtual events. His innovative approach and strategic insights have made him a sought-after expert in crafting high-impact events that build trust and drive results. And no surprise, today we're talking virtual events. Michael shares strategies for effective planning and promotion. He discusses the importance of understanding audience pain points and the trends that are emerging as it happens to be in this dynamic field. He also shares with us his tried and true method of leveraging events for profit with his 5-day challenge model. And if that's not enough, we also talk about the role of strategic partnerships. There is a little something for everyone in the marketing org in this episode. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Michael, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Super excited to have you on here. We're going to be talking about virtual events today, which is definitely like, that's a hot topic for me, so I can't wait to get into it, but welcome. Before we do get to that, I always like to introduce my guests to the listeners by doing a little round of standard questions. The first one is, what was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't, what would you say was your first kind of introduction into marketing?
Yeah, I would say the very first that is memorable to me was whenever I was first starting out, fresh out of college. I went to college for business and marketing, but I had no clue what I was going to be doing. And so the very first role I jumped into was actually when I got out of college and I was looking for some way to make some money because, you know, most college kids are broke. And that was me. I was like, I got no money, so I got to figure something out. And so one of my friends said, hey, you should try real estate. And I'm like, real estate?
Oh, interesting.
And so he was like, you should try real estate. And I said, but dude, I got no money. I'm in college. He said, how about we do this? You work in my business and I'll coach you in real estate. And so we did a barter. He coached me in real estate and I did marketing. I did, I'd say some systems and automations for him.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I ever heard of Russell Brunson. First time I ever heard of people like Dean Graziosi and all these people, Dan Kennedy. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. He started teaching me things and I started watching these videos. So that was the very first time. It wasn't an official role. It was more of a barter between two friends.
This is exactly why I like to ask the question, because I think everyone has this idea in their head of what marketing is and what marketing isn't. So it's great to see how like people interpret the question. And you're actually not the first person I've interviewed that has said real estate was kind of that first time that they were introduced. And I think it's because it's one of these things that naturally lends well to like figuring out how to reach out to people with different distribution channels and all that good stuff. Now that's your origin story. Tell me where you're at now. What are you doing?
Yeah. So right now we run a full service done for you virtual event agency. So we come in, we run your virtual event from start to finish, run the marketing for it, run the sales for it, run everything. And it all was born out of that first position with a friend. We got so good at marketing his business that people said, hey, what in the world are you guys doing? Like, we got to know. And so we were like, oh shoot, people want us to do this for them. And so we built an agency. I don't know, it's probably 6 years now, somewhere around there ago, and just started doing it by myself for other people and then eventually build a team around it.
Amazing. Now, what is it that you love about what you do? But also conversely, with the good, there's the bad. What, if anything, could I pluck out of what you're doing to make it like the perfect job? Let's start off with the good. What is it that you love about what you're currently doing?
Okay. What I love about it is I love the amount of money you can make through just one event. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you guys. We've had events.
I love that you said that. It's the money.
I'm not saying the money that I make, but like our clients, they can step in and run an event and they can make, I've literally, this is no joke, had people make $4 to $5 million in one event. On the other hand, we've had people make $5,000, $10,000, but it's crazy. And it's just cool to see people can go from making $100,000 a year or $50,000 a year to making millions just through the right virtual events and the right strategy. So that's my favorite, is just seeing how powerful with the right team, obviously. I'm going to give ourselves a pat on the back with the right team.
As you should.
Right? How crazy of an impact they can make. And it's not all about the money, but we've impacted thousands and thousands of lives through these. So that's my favorite part, just seeing how cool and how big, you know, it can blow up people.
I love that. Now, what could I pluck out? What can I pluck out so that it's perfect for you?
I'm going to be honest. I'm not a big fan of client management. Now, I know the clients are the lifeblood of the business, but yeah, some of these clients, you know, I'm not going to say all of them. If you're my client listening to this, I love you. But there's some clients out there you just want to be like, bruh, or sis, what are you doing? Like, right? So, but I'm sure they have the feeling towards me sometimes. But yeah, I would say client management for me has always been something that I've dreamed of, you know, outsourcing. And I think it's something that I want to work on in the future of, you know, getting those project managers in place that are higher caliber to kind of steer the ship for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, like, I actually think that's a good thing to pluck out if you could of anything, if you have passion for other areas, you know, I think that's reasonable. And even outsourcing something like that makes sense because that's someone's superpower, right? Like that client management, like when you have someone that where that's their superpower, it is amazing how much more that relationship flourishes on both ends. Okay. So I think that makes sense. Now, I imagine, though, that you have to also keep up with the marketing trends to ensure that you're not missing anything that's just around the corner as it pertains to virtual events, but also like how you're marketing these events as well, too. So how are you staying up to date with trends? Is it social? Is it newsletters, podcasts, books, people? Tell me.
I'm going to be honest. There's three main ways. Number one is through YouTube. You wouldn't believe how much information I've gotten off of YouTube, just like watching podcasts on YouTube. I like watching instead of just listening to podcasts. So I'm a visual guy. So I'll watch on YouTube like crazy. There's a lot of great marketers online that are sharing free information that you're like, I watched a video last week that blew my mind. I'm like, I wasn't thinking about this. Like I need to implement.
Yes.
So there's tons of free information on the web. We all know that. But number two is, I would say getting in bigger rooms and surrounding yourself with the big dogs, right? And that's one thing that we've done really well is myself, my partners, we've been able to surround ourselves with people that are 10 times ahead of us. And because of that, that gives us an advantage. When you're working rooms and in rooms with people that are doing 50 million a year, 100 million, like that's a different ball game. And so we get to steal a lot of those ideas. Because now not everybody can invest to be in those types of rooms, but you can invest to be in a room. I don't know what room that is for you. So just invest to be around people who are where you want to be is a next one. And then I'll say third, just constantly testing. And some of the best strategies we've ever figured out was by just saying, hey, let's see if this works. Like we have this little idea. This may work. It may not. And we test it. And sometimes it flops. Sometimes we're like, wow, that was awesome. And we'll do it again. And we'll do it again. And so constantly testing and pushing the limits on what's possible sounds kind of, what do you call it? Kind of sounds like too cliche, right? But it's truly something we do is like try to test something new every couple months, like something brand new in our room. Hey, let's try. Oh, school's a big thing right now. The school app, as a lot of people are saying, let's test using that instead of this community. Hey, it's cool to see what happens when you test.
Yeah, the reason that they call it a cliche is because it's something that works, right? And I think that when you're testing, there's always something that you can learn from it. It's either going to be a success and you've learned that, or it's a flop, quote unquote, but there's something that you gain from even doing that part of it. Now, you did mention that you like to listen to podcasts. Any podcasts that you want to shout out that you've gotten like a ton of really good just kind of insights from?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Russell Brunson, and I know a lot of people are like, "Oh, ClickFunnels, Russell Brunson." If you're not familiar with them, look them up; they're amazing. But he just has really good videos and really good interviews, and so I try to consume as much as I can of him. There's several others I could name off, and actually, I may give you. I actually have a playlist, and it's totally free. Ooh. I have a playlist of all my favorite marketing videos. I can just send to you.
Let's do that.
And then the listeners, if you want that as well, you could click it down in the show notes somewhere. But so I kind of have this file of just random videos that I've found valuable. One of my other favorite guys, I know him personally, is Eddie Maloof. Eddie is a great marketer. So I listen to him and a few others. But yeah, I'll make sure you guys get that file.
Oh, I love that. Love me a good little Spotify playlist of all the things that I need to listen to. It's nice and curated. Well, let's talk marketing. Let's talk virtual events. Before we dive too deep, I do want to make sure that we are talking about the same thing, because I know that even with my team, as I'm talking about virtual events, we have very different ideas of what that is, right? For some people, they think a virtual event is a webinar. For other people, it's a full day event. Maybe it's multiple, like different tracks and whatnot. So as we're talking about virtual events, kind of give me the compass of like, where do we land on that spectrum of virtual events?
All of them, right? And so the cool thing about
perfect
virtual events, you can build them out based upon what the goal is in your business, right? And so a lot of people come and ask me, "Hey, Michael, should I run webinars? Should I run a summit? What should I do?" And I always say, "Okay, what's the end goal?" And sometimes that stumps people, and they're like, "What does that even mean?" Well, meaning like, what are you ascending people into? What are you selling? What service? What product? And the reason why I ask that is because if you're selling a $100 product, you don't need to spend 5 days a week with somebody. You just need to spend probably an hour, maybe something similar. Yeah. And one of my friends said this one time. They said, you need about an hour's worth of time with somebody to get them to spend about $1,000. So for every hour that you spend with somebody, you get about $1,000 worth of trust. And then in my head, that blew my mind. I'm like, oh, wow, that makes sense. That's why on 1 hour and 60, 90 minute webinars, you can sell a $1,000 to $2,000 program, is because you're gaining $1,000 to $2,000 worth of trust over those hours. So, you know, that's why one of my favorite virtual event models, which we'll probably talk more about today, is the 5-day challenge model. Are you familiar with the challenge model at all?
I am not familiar. Tell me.
Oh man, that's my favorite. And so what it is that you take people into an experience where you run your virtual event for 5 days straight. And you may be like, "Michael, that is crazy. 5 days? It's only an hour and a half per day.
Yeah.
5 days straight." But what happens is this model is super good at getting people to take action before they ever buy your service or your product. So let's say, for example, you sell a healthcare or let's say a fitness style product or service, right? So let's say you have a coaching program for busy professionals to get their health better, right? And so you could actually run this 5-day events where every day you're giving them actionable steps to take. And then at the end of the 5-day event, you're giving them an option to continue the progress, continue the journey with you. And it works so well because people every day start making progress. Day one, they may find an accountability partner at the gym. Day two, they may learn about, you know, nutrition plans, and you may actually have them go out and build their own custom nutrition plan, you know, that day. Day three, you may build them out a workout plan. So at the end of the week, they're like, "Wow, I've made so much progress, more progress than I've made in the past years trying to do this myself. I got to continue working with Michael. I have to continue working with Billy or Carol." And they're blown away. And that's what we call them challenges, is because we challenge them during the virtual event to take steps towards their goal and actually take action. And these are amazing at selling high ticket too, meaning you could sell programs in the thousands of dollars because, again, we're having more immersion with them. And I want you to write this down if you're taking notes. The more immersion, the higher the conversion. And so we've sold anywhere from $1,000 products all the way up to $75,000 products, no joke, in these 5-day challenges. So that's why I love them. That's what they are.
So I want to double click on that, because when you talk about a 5-day challenge, it definitely makes sense from a B2C perspective and even like the dollar amounts, right? Like, and I love the fact that you said immersion, because immersion is like that true engagement that you're trying to get to, right? From a virtual event that sometimes I think people think of it more as a very passive form of content that you're quote unquote engaging with. But what does that look like for B2B? Because maybe, you know, from a B2B perspective, you don't have really businesses that can engage over 5 days for an hour at a time. I mean, like I take a look at my calendar and, well, first, I don't have a time slot that is empty throughout like every single day. So like, what does that look like from B2B? Or do you see that it works just as effectively for that?
Yeah, it can. It can. I think every audience is different. So let me say that. And I should have stated that beforehand, but it has worked. And it all comes down to what is the pain point that you're bringing a solution to, right? What is that pain point? Because I'm sure there's a pain point that you have. Yeah. I haven't asked you, I haven't dove into it, but I'm sure there's something inside I can figure out that you would love to have help with. And if I could show you how to cure that, you know, issue, or, you know, fix that problem over 5 days, I bet you would commit 30 to 60 minutes with me every day. I don't know what that is for you, but I'm sure you would. Yeah. And so we've seen it for B2B for sure. Now there's going to be some people you may be targeting 8 and 9 figure entrepreneurs. That's a whole different ballgame. They're not, CEOs aren't going to be spending time. And to be honest, those guys are just going to go and directly buy. They have $20,000, $30,000. They can just write you a check right now. But these work really well for, you know, beginner and intermediate style niches that, aren't those 10 million, 20, 30 million CEOs. So we've worked this in many different niches and many B2Bs as well.
Now, what I want to ask is, you know, you've already talked about pain points. Is that one of many things from a strategic standpoint to help you create a successful virtual event? Like, you have to understand your audience's pain points in order to be successful at a virtual event. But what else do I kind of need to have in place? What are my strategies for a successful event?
Yeah, great question. That's definitely needed. And if you don't know those, you know, you're probably going to be in a tough spot. But what I tell people is, whenever you're crafting your virtual event, what we like to do is we like to step back and just look at our potential customers, our prospects from a 30,000 foot view, right? And we say, okay, what are their dream goals, right? If they could snap their fingers today, where would they want to be? And most of the time it's, hey, I want to lose 50 pounds. Or in some scenarios, I want to have, 200 leads coming in per day. I don't know what that is, but we say, okay, what is that? But then where are they now? And so we look at not only the problems they're facing, but what do they actually desire? What is their actual dream destination? And then take it back to where they are now and figure out where the gap is, right? And that's where your process, your program comes in, right? That week, that 5 days you spend with them, you're not going to be able to give them everything you know, everything that you have in your vault. We know that. I mean, being able to just spending 4 or 5 hours with somebody, more than likely, you're not going to be able to provide them the results in that time frame. And so what you're going to do is you're going to say, okay, here's this gap. How can we get them started on the journey to that dream destination, right? So we know you live in, on the West Coast. I live on the East Coast. Okay, how can we help her get closer to the East Coast? We may not make all the progress in 5 days, but we can at least start, right? And so we build out actionable steps. And I tell our clients, hey, what are the things they can do this week that would get them on that journey? But one thing I will say, a lot of people think whenever it comes to virtual events, it's all about, I'm going to add more value. I'm going to add more value. I'm going to overteach. I'm going to make them feel like they just got sprayed with a fire hydrant or a fire hose. Mm-hmm. Not always about that. It's about helping them change their belief system as well in the process and being very methodical about the content you give them. Because you got to remember, people, they're coming into this virtual event, this virtual experience with a lot of different beliefs, a lot of different hangups. You know, some people coming in saying, oh, my family's been obese for their whole life. I'm never going to be able to lose this weight. Some people come in saying, hey, I've lost this weight before and it came back. I'm just not worthy. There's going to be a lot of people coming in with different things happening up here. And it's your responsibility not to overteach. We want to add value, but we want to take them on a journey that transforms the way they live their life and the way they view their life. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. I think you want to be able to take them on a journey, and you can't do that if you're, you know, giving them the entire thing. I mean, the analogy that you use, you know, drinking from a fire hose is a really great example, because all of that seems really great, but if nothing sticks, then all you're doing is just kind of repelling everything that you've created, which I think is why also like your 5-day challenge also works as well too, right? Like it's bite-sized pieces.
Exactly.
It's actionable that I can take. I can absorb it, understand it. And more than anything, I think also there is this word of mouth that happens from something that someone actually retains and learns, where they go speak it out to somebody else, right? And all of a sudden it's double folded. The, you know, and that's also why I feel so strongly about virtual events, right? Like, is that it can work exponentially well if you create it and craft it in such a way where people are understanding it. And that's the value that they're getting. The value isn't how much content, it's the quality of the content that they're getting. Yeah. Right. Now, I also think that there's a bit of a misnomer as far as like virtual events. I'd already talked about it. Like there's, you know, there's a webinar and then there is the full day event. Help me better understand what kind of questions I need to maybe ask internally to a team to figure out which one is better for me, or maybe it's a combination of it.
Yeah. Like I said, it all depends on your goal. Like, and I'm going back to this again, so don't hit me over the head here. But again, if you only have a $15,000 program, you probably aren't going to build enough trust in an hour for somebody to come out and spend $15,000 right away, right? You're going to need more time with them. And so that's when I go to the longer events. Now, I will say this. If you're just starting out and you've never ran a virtual event before, I would suggest starting out with a webinar, as they call them, or a masterclass where you're teaching like 60 to 90 minutes. Get one or two of those in so you can get the feel of a Zoom room or of a camera pointing at your face, because sometimes it could be a little scary. I get that. So maybe start out with a shorter class, but just know that these are really good to ascend people in your business. So for example, we have one client right now. He uses these 60 to 90 minute classes to sell his community. He has a membership platform that costs like $47 to $97 a month. And so he just runs these 60 to 90 minute classes, sells that membership platform. But then what he does is he runs another longer event, a 5-day challenge for them every 8 weeks or so. And then on that 5-day challenge, he sells a $5,000 to $10,000 program. And so this works really well because they get in, they buy us a lower ticket product. They start consuming that lower ticket product and start saying, wow, this is amazing information. I want more. And then he takes them through a longer experience where he can build more trust, more rapport, and sell them a higher ticket product. So I would say it depends on where you're at. Start out with the smaller events if you're just starting out, but just know if you have a higher tier program, you may want to look at something a little bit longer later.
Give them a little taste. That's, you know, virtual events are 31 flavors. Let them try out a little piece of everything so that they know exactly what it is that they're getting. Now, we talked about, like, you know, first starting off, you know, starting off with webinars to get a good feel for it, for your audience, for yourself as well too. I'd love to talk about the planning of a virtual event as well too, because I'm often in meetings where people are very quick, like, oh, let's just throw together a quick workshop in like 2 weeks and like a webinar and let's just do an event, you know, 6 weeks from now. And I'm always like, well, if we wanted to achieve our goal, which for this example, let's say it's lead generation, right? You know, identifying new people as far as like leads, not necessarily bottom of the funnel, but like getting new people into the funnel. I'm a big believer that you need enough time to be able to execute things properly, but I'd love to hear your take on like, what's the timing of it? Give me like for a webinar, what's an ideal time to get it all set up and then actually promote it? Like how far ahead should I promote a webinar, and then we'll talk events, but let's start with webinar.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start there. And I'll say this. I understand everybody is at different points in their journey. Some of you listening right now, you have a full blown team. You like have, tech person, you have copywriter.
Yeah.
I get it, But for those of you all that are just starting out, you can make this as complex or as simple as you want. Just know that, right? And so don't get overwhelmed. But I'll say for our free webinars, you know, a lot of times we'll start, we promote for like maybe 10 to 14 days. But then, you know, it just depends. If we're doing recurring, whereas every week, you know, we'll just, it's just 7-day promotion, right? But normally the max you want to do is probably 2 weeks. 7 to 10 days is that sweet spot, because if you start promoting it too far out, then you start obviously, you know, losing people's interest, and you start forget about the class. And so you have to work extra hard to nurture them and remind them about the classes. And so, you know, I would say the build out time, though, it just depends on you and your team. You know, you may need 30 days to build it out. You may need only with your team 2 weeks to build it out before you start promoting a free class, right? So just take an assessment and say, okay, what resources do I have right now? What can I, if you're a one-man army, what can I do myself? And it may be that, you know what, you don't set up the most elaborate funnel in the world, right? It may be just you set up an opt-in page with a confirmation page, right? You may not have upsells and downsells and all these crazy things. But remember, it's just about getting it done, right? And so many people let all those little pieces stop them from actually getting the end goal completed. And I don't want that to be you. Just say, how can I get this done today with my team? But I would say us normally is about 30 days out. We start planning these. We plan quarterly our marketing, right? But, you know, it takes about 30 days, you know, to get something up and ready, like actually super good. It's ready to
go. I love that you said that too, and you had a special call out for the size of your team, because I do think that it does matter. It's very different, at least I can only speak from my experience. It's very different if I have all of the information to be able to throw that webinar. But if, for example, I also have to construct like the abstract and find the person who's going to be speaking and then put together the outline, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot longer of a process than just having the information, putting it together, and then starting to promote it. So I love the fact that you did call out, you know, just the size of a team. What about for I don't want to say an all-day event, but it is more of an event that has different tracks and different speakers with breakout rooms, right? Like you get what I'm envisioning here. Yeah, more of a summit style. Yeah. Like how far in advance do you plan for that?
Yeah, great question. And actually that's something that we're doing in our community right now. We have a client that is actually in the same spot. He's like, okay, Michael, I want to run my own summit. When should I do it? And so I said, let's plan something 90 days from now, like 90 days. Now with even a big summit like that, you may promote 30 days. He has us helping him build it out. So we're going to build it out faster, but we're like, okay, 90 days out, let's start building this thing. You know, we'll take a month to build it, you know, a month to make sure everything's kind of tidied up, do all our tests, just make sure all the marketing is in place, and then 30 days of promotion, right? And it just depends on, you know, how many speakers, depends on what the goal is, that time frame. But I usually tell people, just look at your calendar. When you have, you know, 3-4 months from now that you could place it, and I think that will do, you know, a sufficient amount. But you know, if you're running a big conference, like we just wrapped up this week, a conference where there was like 9,000 people in it. Virtual was like massive amount too. And so that's like, we're already starting to plan next year, right? And so I think it just depends on the level that you're taking this. But for most people just starting out, I would say just plan a quarter ahead.
Oh, I love that. I love any sort of planning ahead of time. The proactiveness versus the reactiveness definitely goes a long way.
Well, when you do that, when you do that, you free yourself of a lot of the stuff that comes with doing it last minute. And I do have one friend and one partner that he's one of those guys that's a creative, right? He's always thinking of new ideas. And there's times when he'll be like, hey, next week I want to run this event. And we're like, whoa, right? Like, okay, let's do it. And we'll do it. And it'll be successful. But sometimes the results lack because of the lack of preparation, right?
Yes.
So that's what happens when you can really lay out a plan. You can kind of be like a military man or woman and be like, okay, how do we want to attack this thing? Which angle do we want to hit to take down the end goal the best? And so just know that virtual events, marketing can be stressful, right? We all know that. Trying to get your business out into the world can be stressful, but it doesn't have to be with the right preparation.
So true. Talk to me about the promotions of the events. What do you find is like a tried and true, like you guys always have to be doing XYZ, or is there something that's a tried and true from a promotion standpoint? Like, do we want to put dollars? Is it all organic? I'm sure you're going to tell me it depends on the goals. So let's just say my goal is lead generation and I'm not doing a summit, I'm doing a webinar. What are some channels that you have seen consistently in your business come up where you're like, this is kind of like the magic, the secret sauce, shall right. I say, of like promotion of a virtual webinar, for example?
Yeah, again, so many variables here, right? But yes. I would say for us, you know, for people that are wanting to make the webinars frequent thing, meaning that it's built into their marketing strategy and they're going to do more than just one, we do paid marketing, right? So right now, a lot of our clients are utilizing the Meta ads, TikTok ads to feed the machine because, you know, it works so well. And if you have the right marketing built out and the right systems built out. But I'll say one thing that a lot of people forget about, and this was bigger back in like the middle of the 2000s, like 2010, like people were doing these partner and JV launches. I think people forgot that those still work out really well. And we try to do that as much as possible because I would rather market to a warm audience than a cold audience. And I think we all would say that, right? And a lot of times, if you can go into and partner with somebody who already has built that trust, built that reputation, it's a whole lot easier to sell to them and get them in your event. And so actually how we built that, you know, I was bartering with that real estate guy and his business. We grew his education company to $750,000 in 10 months without an audience, without ads, just leveraging other people's audiences. And so one of my favorites is saying, hey, how can we JV? How can we partner with other people to bring people into our webinars, bring people into our events? And those crush it almost every time we utilize it.
I love that. Now, is that what you meant? Because when we were communicating back and forth, one of the things that you brought up was the strategic partnership framework. Is that what you meant by it? Like identifying those partners that you can leverage to, I don't know, do a co-marketing event together?
Yeah. And I'm actually in the middle of building that out right now. Strategic partnerships are crazy. And so what we do for our clients, what I recommend you do is that you say, okay, what is it right now that I have at my disposal? And what do I not have at my disposal? And so take a quick audit today. And for you, that may be an audience. You may say, you know what? We have crazy good content. And that was our position when I first started in marketing. We looked at everything. We said, wow, we've really got this presentation. We've really got our events dialed in, these webinars, these classes. But the area where we lacked was we didn't have anybody to teach it to. We were like, this is good information, great information. We maxed out our 500 friends on Facebook and our 500 people on Instagram. We said, what next? And we didn't have a lot of money for marketing. And so we had some pre-existing relationships with people that had big Facebook groups. They had a big email list. And I should say big, but at the time it was like 30,000 people, 50,000 people. And we said, hey, why don't we just go to them and see if we can talk to their audience about what we have. And so obviously you're not just going to random people, but we found people that aligned with our mission or, you know, in, I would say, what do you call it? Their mission, their message, their model, you know, fit ours well. And so one of our first partners, just to give you an idea for what this could be for you, is we have a partner that, you know, taught budgeting and taught how to get your money right. And we taught investing in real estate. So we're like, what's the next best thing after you get your money budgeted? What are you supposed to do with it? You're supposed to place it other places, invest it in other vehicles. And so we said, hey, we teach investing, you teach budgeting. How about we teach people after they got their money, right? How to grow it with real estate. And that was phenomenal. And so we've done that time and time again for people, is just finding other people that complement our niche and run events together, and it blows up.
I love that. I'm a big believer also in partnerships as well too. I've participated in every brand that I've helped manage. It is one of those areas where you make really great connections, and it's also a different point of view from where you're coming from, right? And especially if you're able to find a partner that you guys just naturally fit really well. It's not competing. There's, you're truly for the attendee providing value from like the content perspective, right?
Yeah.
Without obviously overstimulating people who do attend. One of, I kind of want to go back because I feel like we didn't talk enough about it in regards to just kind of the promotions, the tried and true. You had mentioned some of the paid, but are there other ways to be able to promote an event that you've seen be effective? Like how effective is organic social? How effective is like website banners for you, you know, sales enablement? Or does it take everything in order to really get the numbers that you want to see?
Yeah. I mean, we want all the troops on our side, right? We want everything. And yeah. So organic, like some of our, one of our clients right now, she has a bigger social media following. So I'm not going to say she doesn't, she has about 100,000 followers,
yeah.
But she makes viral content every single week, like just on repeat. And she fills up a webinar, a free 60 and 90 minute class with about 2,000 people every week. And you're like, Michael, 2,000 of the same people? No. Brand new eyes, some weeks it may be 1,000, 1,500, but brand new eyes, fresh leads, 1,500, 2,000 people every single week, just because she's creating good content that's valuable on social media with call to actions. And so the question is on social media, are you creating content that's valuable to your audience or valuable to you? Because a lot of people say, well, I've tried that. I've tried marketing on social media and making content. When I look at their stuff, I'm like, bro, this is good for me and you because we're in business, but maybe your audience isn't resonating with this. And so ask yourself, how can I build, you know, viral content that relates to my audience? So organic for sure, partnerships, paid marketing. We do a lot of podcasts. Podcasts do amazing for us. So, you know, we oftentimes pay for podcasts. So there's been times where we've paid, you know, $1,000, $2,000 to be on a show. And because it has our target audience, and if we say the right things and give the right invitation, a lot of those people will be drawn in and come attend our classes, attend our 5-day challenges. And so we've made a lot of money through podcasts too.
I love that. It's really wherever you find the community that you want to be able to engage with.
With podcasts, you kind of have to be more prepared, right? Because somebody
can't
be like, hey, can you record and drop a podcast in a week? It's like, no, a lot of these shows are booked out 3-4 months.
Yeah.
So that's where the preparation comes, is like, okay, pre-planning where the podcast at that in the audience is congregating, so I can pre-plan ahead of time how to hit them, and not in a bad way, but like obviously get my message in front of them.
I definitely don't think that you want to physically hit them. So that's good. But I do think
people say Michael's choosing violence today. So
yeah, don't choose violence. Definitely choose value over that. But I also think like I do like the proactive nature of knowing what it is that you want to quote unquote hit them with, right? Like it's being able to determine what's this valuable content. I mean, like you've served me up like, hey, these are the areas. Does this make sense? And I think that's a great way to craft any sort of outreach, whether it's a podcast, a webinar, or partnership, right? Like I don't know. I always advise people to like, don't force other people that you want to be able to network and engage with to do the heavy lifting. Do as much of the heavy lifting. That way it does feel like a partnership and you want to be able to collaborate with them.
Yeah. And we tell people, you know, it has to be a win, 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 a win for you, obviously, because you want to make money, but it definitely, definitely has to be a win for the partner, right? Because if not, they're not going to want to do it. Then you have to have a win for the audience, right? And so that's what we got really good at the beginning, was saying, hey, what does this partner want? And for you, it's going to be different than me, right? For your partner is going to be totally different. Your partner may say, hey, you know what? I'll promote this to my audience, but I want 50% of any revenue. Or they may say 20%, or they may say, hey, I want a podcast swap. I don't know what that is. So you have to go where maybe they'll come and do it for free if they can, you know, I'm not even going to give more examples, you know. So
yes, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Exactly. How can it be a win for everybody and truly add value to the audience? So yes, you're right on point there.
I love that. Now, what are some kind of common mistakes that you've seen other businesses do as it pertains to like running virtual events at any level?
I would say this one's going to sound basic, but it's giving up too soon, because a lot of times people run one and be like, I didn't get the results I wanted. When in reality, you have to remember Virtual events are different for everybody. Sales cycle is different for everybody. And so just know that virtual events can work. We've had, like, for example, one client, this is going to show you how amazing this is. He started last year in like November or December running webinars. We were spending money on marketing. I'm going to be honest, we were attracting the wrong people. The webinars weren't converting, and it was really easy to get, you know, frustrated and want to quit. And he, New Year's, came to me and was like, hey, what do we need to do? So we made some adjustments. We kept tweaking it and figuring it out. And eventually, finally about February or March, and we started this like around November, February or March, we cracked the code on the ads. We started targeting the right people. The presentation got dialed in, and March, May, June, and August, he's made six figures in a brand new business. He started this business at the same time he started his webinars. Let me say that again. He started his business the same time he started his webinars last January, December-ish, November-ish. But then every single month, because of virtual events and because he had the right systems in place from March, May, because he was running 5-day challenges. That's what I'm saying. March, May, June, and August. We just wrapped up one a couple weeks ago. Multiple six figures each event. But it took us 4 or 5 months to get there. It was like horrible. So I'll say biggest mistake is that people give up too soon and say this doesn't work, when in reality, it's marketing, y'all. Marketing's different for everybody. It's a numbers game. Got to figure out your numbers.
I love that. I feel like that should be a bumper sticker. What kind of emerging trends are you seeing in emerging trends or innovations as it pertains to virtual events that brands should be kind of like on the lookout for so that they don't miss the boat? I always like to talk about emerging trends because, well, one, it's always interesting to see from different perspectives what people think an emerging trend is. But two, like, I always want people to be on the lookout for it. If you are just starting to hear about something, like, other people are talking about it as well. So what kind of emerging trends are you starting to see?
Yeah, this one is not necessarily something that's emerging. It's something like we're kind of in right now. And I think some people don't really see that we're in it right now, or maybe you do. Maybe as marketers you do, but maybe some don't. We are in a time right now where the market, at the time of recording this, and maybe the time you're listening to this, the market's really weird, right? We're recording this at a time where the political stance in America is crazy. I'm not saying we should get into politics, but it is. I mean, there's so much unrest. Money's tight for a lot of families, for a lot of businesses. And so right now, one of the things that's emerging is people transitioning to really building out solid low ticket products for their businesses. And a lot of people during COVID or, around that COVID time were selling really high ticket services. And this isn't just in the coaching and speaking and author. This was a lot of businesses were selling a lot of higher ticket softwares and services. But now they're seeing people are having a harder time spending money. And so I'll say right now, one of the things is I'm not going to shy you away from creating lower ticket products like communities and other things that, you would see these people building online. I think we all should have that, but I don't want you to shy away from the higher ticket programs and services that you offer. Because with the right nurturing, with the right rapport building, you can still sell those products. But do I think it's smart to have a low ticket product in place? Yeah, go for it. Definitely good to have many, many guns in the arsenal, right? Many, many methods is fine. It's cool to have those products. But what I'm saying is don't skew away from what has worked, because it still can work. It's just maybe needs a tweak in the strategies, tweaks in how you sell those products. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I do want some clarification though in regards to the kind of sort of emerging trend in innovation, because what if I'm a business that doesn't have like a lower ticket item that I can push out? Is there something that I should be on the lookout for, or should I just be conscious of the fact, like you had articulated, that there is some unrest, right? So maybe people need a little bit longer to make that decision if you're not able to have that lower ticket item.
Yeah. Well, I like what you just said there for sure, is being more strategic about how can I build trust faster. I think that's what we as marketers should always be doing, right? That's what we do is get our message out in front of people. Hey, how can we build enough trust that they want to purchase our product? but how can we do that faster? And so a lot of people right now, this would be a good conversation, is they're focusing on selling lower tier products or services or software.
Yeah.
But instead of changing our pricing, how can we just learn how to build more rapport faster? And so I would love that. But if you're here and you don't have a lower ticket service or product, one thing I would say is just ask your audience, right? Ask your audience, what would that be? And so many people overcomplicate things and they're like, well, what is the magic pill? And just got to ask them what their symptoms are, right? And so that's what we've done time and time again is like, hey, put out a survey. You can use Google Forms, right? You can use Typeform and just send out like, hey, what are some of the things, like if you had $100 to spend to fix this problem, what would you love? What would you, or which way would you like our services to be packaged? You can ask that question in so many different ways. But customer feedback is one thing a lot of businesses don't really do enough and don't take enough. And I'll say with our virtual events, that's one thing we've gotten really good at is taking pre-event surveys, post-event surveys, and just implementing these in a way. So now after every event or prior to going into the event, we have feedback now from our audience, right? Before the event, we have a survey going out saying, okay, what's your current income? You know, what are you struggling with right now in your business or in XYZ? What have you tried before? And then after the event, hey, what did you think about these topics? What stopped you from buying this program or this service? Yeah. And little things like that, whenever it comes to customer feedback, can be big. And I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot. I just get passionate.
Oh my gosh. No, are you kidding me? This is a podcast. I am passionate about the post-event survey, but I love that you said the pre-event survey as well too, because there are some golden nuggets that you can get from people even before they walk in that could potentially, this is what I always like to say, if you ask them beforehand, it could potentially like tell you whether or not whatever it is that you're going to tell them during this like summit or webinar or whatnot is heading in the direction that hits it for them, that delivers what it is that they need to help find resolution for that pain point. So I love the fact that you said that. I also really love the fact that you are passionate about virtual events. I know that it is your line of work, but it's really tough to find people that are like, yeah, let's do it. I've got one final question for you. If you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
I will say, that's a good question. One that I talk about frequently whenever I go on shows is knowing your self-worth. And I know this is not marketing related, but whenever I was first starting in marketing, I was I was undercharging. I was severely undercharging. Yeah. I was making people $100,000 in a week, $1 million in a week, and I was charging a measly $1,000, $1,500. And at the time, I didn't believe in myself. I seen the results. The results were there. We were making people money in sales. But I just, for some reason, I had this blockage. And I think it was a sense of worth. And it just wasn't a good spot. And so the younger Michael, I would say, hey, believe in yourself a little bit more. You are valuable. Your marketing skills, you're listening to this and watching this right now, your marketing skills, the knowledge that you have up here and in here is so valuable. So valuable. So quit undermining yourself. Quit undercharging. Know that you are premium and you can charge premium. So that's what I would tell the old Michael. And that's what I wish I would have known sooner.
I love that you said that. And you were actually not the first guest to actually say that as well too. Because I do think that, and I don't know if it's a marketing thing, but sometimes I do think that we undervalue what it is that we have, that we can bring to the table, and are so keen on tying it back to those six figures that a client wants in order to be worthy of it. Like, there is something to be said about putting something together that gets you good brand awareness, that builds a community, right? That is delivering the value that you want from a brand to a consumer. So I think that's really great advice. Michael, I cannot thank you enough for coming on here and sharing just kind of all of your knowledge. I really appreciate it.
Well, hey, thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it. And everybody listening, make sure you're commenting below, leaving a review, subscribe, because listen, I know how hard these shows take to produce. So
thank you.
She deserves all the love below, and just go ahead, leave a review, subscribe, because she's amazing. And there's many, many shows coming up. I'm sure she's going to be dropping. So don't miss out.
Excellent. Thank you. I hope that you guys gained as much insight as I did. I'm a huge fan of virtual events, if you couldn't tell by the episode. I have got your key takeaways on this one. The first one, virtual events can drive sales and build trust. Events like webinars are really highly effective for selling products and services by offering in-depth engagement with potential customers. Think a little bit like look before you buy. But you have to also make sure that the event format aligns with your goals. Love the simple breakdown that Michael shared. Short webinars for low ticket items and longer events for higher ticket sales. I think it's a good framework. Not everything is going to fit into it, but a good framework or someplace to start. Now, part of that format is not just what you're going to do, but also it's what you're going to talk about. The content. Focus on addressing pain points of your audience to really help drive value. When you have the right format and the right content, these events can significantly boost your sales strategy and it turns into trust building. They can be real game changers, but they are just one piece of the sales puzzle. A well-executed webinar like a five-day challenge can significantly enhance engagement and drive those high-ticket sales. Amazing. That is exactly what we want, right? And while powerful, they should be integrated into a broader strategy involving lead generation. But you also have to nurture those leads, follow-ups, and content marketing to fully capitalize on their potential. By combining webinars with these strategies, you can also build lasting relationships and really help drive sustained growth. Key takeaway number two, strategic partnerships can boost your virtual events. Now, I love this one because, well, not just because I picked it out, but I think it's a good hack. By collaborating with partners who align with your niche or your brand, you can expand your reach and engage a more relevant audience. Now, the right partnership should be beneficial for everyone involved, including the partner and the audience. A successful partnership involves cross-promoting between partners because it's mutually beneficial, right? So you're not the only one that's going to be promoting. They will be promoting it as well too. And you're doing it to two different audiences, your audience that you have built out in your CRM and then their audience that they've built out in their CRM. It's like having an extra set of hands to help. Think of it as teaming up with someone who already has a built-in audience that's interested in what it is that you're offering. So for instance, if you're hosting a webinar on social media strategies, partnering with a well-known influencer in the industry can provide a real significant boost. Great social proof. It's about making sure that the partnership benefits everyone involved and provides real value to your audience. Like the most successful collaborations are those where all parties are clear on their goals and they work together to deliver an exceptional experience for attendees. And key takeaway number three, feedback is tied to your success. Now, gathering and applying feedback is the key to improving your virtual events. Oftentimes, people will overlook the value of feedback, but it was really crucial for enhancing the effectiveness of an event because you know what's going on. This can be done post-event surveys. That's my favorite. And Michael even suggests doing pre-event surveys. And what that looks like is asking specific questions in the event registration to help you align content with the audience's needs. If you've already done an event, the feedback from a previous webinar can really guide the adjustments to lead to increased engagement and sales in future webinars and events. It's not just a checkbox. It's a key ingredient. It is a key ingredient for virtual event success because it can really transform an event. Consider a scenario where your webinar is underperforming. It happens, right? You got to be able to test things out. Feedback can tell you why, and you might discover that your audience wants more interactive elements or practical examples. Adjusting your format based on this feedback can really lead to more engaged attendees and higher conversions. Think of feedback as your roadmap. Guide your events with the insights you gather to continually refine and be successful with those virtual events. What did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page or the YouTube channel. Leave it in a review on Apple. Slide into my DMs on LinkedIn. Let's keep this conversation going. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike, and thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.